Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 114, the Inconsistency Cast. Speaking of things that are inconsistent, Colin's here. What's up, Colin? Oh, that was a low blow. Usually I go to Ben first, Colin, but I realized immediately I blew that transition. How you doing, Colin?
I'm a little insulted, I think.
Well, you and I are the ones that that miss the occasional podcast. And of course, you've heard the chuckle from Ben, the steady Ben, the Ben who shows up for all three periods. Ben, how you doing, Ben?
In that sense, I am unlike the Sharks, I guess, of all of us.
Yeah, well, listen, before we start the podcast, there's something important that I think we all agree should be brought to the attention of our listeners. And that is there is still time to vote to get Logan Couture in this All-Star game. And if you have followed this season and this podcast at all, you know the three guys that should definitely be at the All-Star game are Couture, Pavs, and Meyer. You know, unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. But Couture still has an opportunity to get in. And, you know, you can look at the All-Star game a variety of ways. We'll do our same yearly, here's what we would do for the All-Star game cast when we get there. We had to fight not to do it this podcast. But, you know, regardless of how you think of the All-Star game, whether you think it's just a marketing opportunity, a ruse, whatever, doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is there are certain players that legitimately deserve to be there. And I'm not slighting the other Sharks necessarily that are going, but Logan Couture is one of those guys this season that has consistently been one of the best Sharks on the team, and he should represent at that point. Do you guys have anything to add to that? Or are you pretty much in my camp of, yes, vote him in?
I mean, I'm really disappointed that we aren't advocating for Merton Jones to make the All-Star game, just so that each team scores 20 goals.
Oh, that's going to happen anyway. It's an All-Star game.
Yeah, it's an All-Star game. And
not 20.
I mean,
I would let him watch an All-Star game, Ben.
I
guess the new format.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
I just wonder if, has Couture ever been elected to an All-Star game?
I don't think Couture has made an All-Star game yet. I'm actually glad that the NHL chose him over Pavelski, because Pavs has had opportunities to do the All-Star games.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that kicks in my frustration of I would one day prefer the All-Star game going back to having any kind of meaning and having the actual All-Stars of the league, because I think
it never had any meaning.
I know. Well, they're very early days. Early days it did, but not since we've been alive. But hey, look, like, let's make sure that a guy that deserves to be in there from our team gets in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, please.
He might even be cheerful afterwards.
No, he won't. He'll be like, oh, I shouldn't really play American.
But maybe, you know, maybe that's why he just gets extra cranky.
I really whiffed on that eighth goal.
No, you gotta stay with your mouth closed, Ben.
I want our listeners to be able to understand.
Listen, the All-Star game is not the most consistent thing in the world. And that's actually what the topic of this podcast is going to be, because, you know, the last couple of weeks, guys, we've talked a lot about coaching and the Sharks' struggles and a lot of annoyances. This week, boy,
more of the same.
Talk about a roller coaster. You like goals? You got a lot of them. A lot of them from the Sharks and also from their opponents. But here's the thing. You know, in the beginning of the season, we talked about how we thought the Sharks were going to struggle out the gate, and they did. They're struggling a little longer than we'd like. Uh-oh. But the thing we also pointed out was this roster has the potential that when it clicks, it can be stupid lethal. And while we didn't see three solid periods of that in any one of the games this week, we did see what I would consider moments of brilliance. I'll give you an example. We'll talk about, you know, we'll go through the games in the usual order that we do. But for example, in the first period of the Avs game, there was a goal scored by Brent Burns off of assists from Pavelski and Carlson. And you watch Carlson and Burns run that play, essentially, at least that goal. And you look at it and you go, that is what I was expecting Burns and Carlson to be like together. And we haven't seen that kind of consistency, obviously. But when this team clicks, I got a reminder this week after, again, week's frustration, that when this team clicks, it can be scary. And if it can click at the right time, and let's face it, guys, this team's going to make the playoffs, right? So if they can click come playoff time, you know, maybe all's forgotten a little bit, because this team can go places. They have to do that. That's the struggle.
The thing is, you know, when you say that this team clicks, what you're really talking about is on offense, because they I would argue they didn't click at all on defense this week. They scored 17 goals.
Yeah.
And they gave up
14.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
14. No, great assessment. And I don't disagree there. However,
that's been the problem the whole year, right?
That offense can be so potent that maybe it can make a crap defense.
But other teams have defense. I mean, that's really the problem, especially in the last, 6 years, six playoffs. You know, it's not defense winning cups, but it's defense building the foundation for the win. And
if you don't have good defense and you don't have a goaltender beating up at the right time, you're not winning a Stanley Cup.
Sure, the goaltender is that magic chip, but we're losing if Edmonton makes the playoffs and our defense faces Edmonton, faces, you know, playoff McDavid. I don't know if I can guarantee a win in that series.
Let me put the fear of God into both of you right now. playoffs.
Just so the listeners know, before we started this podcast, we talked about making this a positive podcast.
No, but this is important to talk about here, because we're not just approaching the All-Star game, we're also going to get closer and closer to the trade deadline.
Oh boy.
And this week we saw both of our goalies have not exactly good games, despite the Sharks winning two games, because the offense was so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against the Sharks, you know, throwing up seven goals, five goals, and five goals every night, right?
Yes,
I mean,
please.
That's fun hockey. And it's even okay, I guess, when it's 7-4 or even 5-4, because at least the Sharks scored more. But here's the thing. Both of our goalies are sub-900.
Yeah.
So if
you're Doug Wilson, are you starting to think about a trade market for a goalie?
No, I don't think you would for a starting goaltender. You might look at trying to flip down, but I don't even think the value, right? So it's going to have to be a multiplayer trade.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, is there a team out there that might be willing to bet that Martin Jones has just got the flu? Because the only way
I don't think the Sharks are. I don't think in any situation the Sharks are moving. I think if the Sharks end up moving a goaltender at all, it's Dell. I do not want to move Jones.
I mean, here's the thing. Dell's got no market.
Well, I listen, and I understand. That's why I think that even if they do, it's going to be a multiplayer deal, because they're going to want to make space on the goaltending front. I don't think the Sharks, out of principle, will deal Jones. I don't, and that's not my principle,
right?
But that's their principle. I would not.
So you think they're in denial about what's going on here?
No, but if I'm a betting man, two things. One, I think that they view whatever struggles he's having as a momentary or a season. You know, they're not looking at that as being like the new permanent Jones. I also think on the other side, I think, you know, while there are a lot of goaltenders to be had in the NHL, you know what I mean? And and I believe personally, it's a lot easier to find a goaltender than it is a reliable goaltender than it is to find a lot of the other positions. Mm-hmm. I think that if the Sharks make a deal, it's going to be a deal that addresses either the defense or the offense. I don't think they're going to make a deal that addresses goaltending.
Can you think of a goalie who's gone off a cliff like this that has ever bounced back?
Fleury got injured.
I mean, we don't know what is at the root of Jones's badness. It could be an injury.
But you're still like, you know, they.
But if it was an injury, he wouldn't be playing as much.
The ownership and the team believes in him, and I don't think that they're going to view the problem as goaltending, whether it actually is or isn't.
It's a component, as we've talked about all year.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying what I think they're thinking, and I think they look at it as, you know, if they make a move, and I do think they will make a move at this point. I guess I thought they were going to make a move at all points. I don't think goaltending will be it. And if it is it, again, Ben, I think they do something similar to what they did the year we brought Reimer in, which is basically they find a couple of prospects or draft picks, they pair them up with Dell. Because here's the deal. Dell doesn't have a lot of trade value. I don't disagree with you. Yeah. However, if you have been scouting Dell in the past, you might feel like if you don't have a starting goaltender at all, that Dell could be a potential option for you for future seasons. So if you combine that with enough stuff, yeah, maybe you could bring someone in. But even then, let's be real, Ben, right? Let's say the Sharks bring in a backup goaltender. Who are they going to start come playoff times?
I guess that's kind of the point I'm making here, which is that I haven't been a hockey fan nearly as long as you or Colin, and it is a different era now. So maybe that old stuff isn't as relevant as it could be, but I've never seen a good goalie fall apart to the extent that Jones has. Sub 900.
I can't give you an example off the top of my head, but I would be shocked if it had. And there have been a lot of goalies, like, you know, goalies that we consider up on the pantheon of goalies who have had, you know, to be fair, Ben, usually it's when they're older, who have had seasons where they drop off and seasons where they just magically come on. Now, does that mean that they continue to be consistent beyond that? I'm not saying that at all.
And also consider we are Sharks fans, and one of the legacies of the Sharks franchise is having backup goaltenders that go on to, like,
to be better than start
other teams and be amazing for other teams. So I mean,
but those were the Warren Strello development years, right? We're not really in that anymore.
Doesn't Toskala call him? Yeah.
But when you look at, like, you had Shields, Nabby, Kiprusoff, Toskala.
Oh, Kiprusoff, Kipper,
and Schaefer when he was at the peak, which is the right move, because but when you look at the Sharks system, I wouldn't say that goaltending is, you know, it used to be goaltending was their strong suit. I would not necessarily say that anymore. Here's the thing, Ben, unless, and again, I bring this up, right? Unless they move Jones, which I don't think you
I can't see him doing it. Either. I'm just whoever asking
they,
the question
whoever
if maybe
they were bringing in. Whoever they would bring in, they wouldn't start anyway, right? And so kind of like, for me at that point, if that's how you are going to act, then don't even bother. Trade for the defenseman that you need, or trade whatever else it is you think you need. Don't waste everyone's time wasting prospects and draft picks on a guy you're not going to play anyway.
I would need to know, like, I would need to have Wilson's notes to have any notion on who we could possibly bring in to, you know, be the catalyst for this team that doesn't need any more talent. We just need to play better together.
Well, I will tell you the one perk of dealing with a goaltender in that situation, if you are going to do it. And that is that, in my mind, having played goalie when I was young, again, obviously not the NHL or even anywhere near professional level, goaltending is the one position that you can play where you can have at least a tentative grasp of the system and be okay versus, like, you know, slotting a defenseman last minute or a forward last minute into a system that they're not familiar with. That's a tougher adjustment. The goaltender understands how to play percentages if they're worth their salt at all. And anyone going into the NHL is worth their salt. Right. Yeah. So, you know, the one thing is, if you did make that trade, cool. That'd probably be a pretty quick adjustment for that player.
Yeah. But our defensive zone is just a mess. And this week was the, you know, solo opposing player versus our goaltender with a gap between defender and our goaltender. Usually, much to Ben's evil delight, it was Braun who was seen being on the wrong side of the play.
Oh, I don't know. I caught Burns a couple of times in that ass.
We're all used to Burns doing that, right?
Oh, no. Carlson had a few, too. I mean,
the Braun one that really showed where Braun is now was towards the end of the Edmonton game when McDavid just skated by him like he was a pylon.
Yeah, but McDavid's
not a pylon. Yeah, that's McDavid. I mean,
but okay.
I agree.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just not going to go with that. Nope. I'm not going to. No. McDavid is fast, but Braun misplayed that so poorly and got
turned. We're not arguing with you. We're just saying that McDavid makes a lot of people look silly. Yeah.
But here's where I'll...
It's a cop-out. I'm sorry.
No, I'll get with that. That's not true. I'll go with Ben on how Braun reacted to getting turned over by McDavid. Because, yeah, as Alex says, McDavid does that to everybody. Yes. So, you know, you've got McDavid coming at you. You know you're going to be turning around. So how you react to him going by is sort of the test of character. And you see Braun just sort of look up at the lights and completely check out of the play. I mean, the play hadn't actually passed him over. He could have turned and, like, you know, poked or, you know, some little chippy thing just to...
He could have done what he's done his entire career when he had foot speed and reaction, which is, you know, continue to move back into the zone, use his stick to push McDavid to the outside, and he did...
Wait.
That's a big question of McDavid, though, I think. If you're a defenseman and you're playing against McDavid, you need to make a decision on whether or not you are going to commit to being over-aggressive with them and hope that knocks them off, which realistically, I don't think it does, or overly cautious. You know, if you're overly cautious, there are some challenges to that, to the way the Sharks run their system, I would think, in that you know, you got to be careful because then you're letting McDavid dictate the entire play of the system because you're pulling yourself out of position to be overly cautious against him. And that's not, listen, that's not right or wrong. It's the reality of how good Connor McDavid is as a player, that he can do that to you. Gretzky was very similar in that, where, like, you know, you had a couple of options against him, right? Same with guys like Lemieux. You had a couple of options. You can either try to chase him, but if you screw up, you look like an idiot. Or you could play more defensively, but if you do, you're setting basically the tone for the rest of the back line.
And, I mean, the big thing when a forward is rushing a defenseman where the defenseman is skating backwards, they both know the forward is playing the defenseman's pivot. The point at which the defender has to turn, the forward wants to control that. The forward wants to do 100%. His move 100%. So that as he's finishing his move, he's basically countered the defender's pivot. And they're playing a guessing
game. Yeah, you're trying to catch him flat-footed in that situation.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, like, with McDavid, knowing that he knows you have to turn and he's got the speed to sort of decide when. I mean, yeah, it's a losing situation. It's that Braun just gives up. You know, as he shoulder to shoulder with McDavid, you know, McDavid maybe just whispered a sweet little nothing and broke Braun's heart, but he just died right there.
The thing with McDavid, though, that's worth pointing out. I mean, the way he skates very intelligently, right?
He's amazing.
And it's not just his speed at all. It's not just his stick handling. It's his intelligence with the way he handles it. So he knows that he should cut or cross over the second that the defenseman lifts his foot up, because the defenseman has to bring his foot down before he can even attempt to change direction or match wherever McDavid's going. And if you watch him closely, you will see him. He will look. He will watch those skates, and he will play it in a way that he tries to get the defenseman in a position where he needs to turn. And the second he starts to, that's when he cuts to the other direction. And the defenseman is helpless, and that's why he gets open. Auston Matthews does the exact same thing, and Marlowe at his peak, when his speed was fast, would do the same thing. He would, you know, those guys, they're watching that and they're trying to catch you flat-footed. Now, you should be aware of that in advance, and unless you're just completely getting blown by speed, which could be the case for Braun, as we talked this season, you know, you want to put yourself in the position where you're going to have to do the least amount of turning.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't just a game where a bunch of really talented skaters with good hand-eye go out and, you know, screw around. As Alex just gave a really good insight on, there's a lot of thinking going on that these guys are doing, and they are tricky and they are clever. And, you know, you have to play the situation that you're in. And I think that's sort of my point with how often we've been leaving our goalies out to dry, and whether it's Braun just getting totally taken out of the play by a brilliant player, or it's just something with how we're running our defense, our defensive zone. Our goalies are being asked to make saves they shouldn't have to, and then they're also flubbing the shots that they should be saving. Sure. And I can kind of feel that's related when you're supposed to forget the bad ones. It's a constant discussion that NHL goalies have the worst memory on record. But it has to tear at you a bit when your team sort of sells you out and that red light goes on and it's all your fault. And then a sort of easy save comes in and things are just a little off and it goes in. It has to tear you down. And having it happen game to game, you know, it has to be frustrating, especially seeing the energy and, you know, the crazy cool shit that happens on the offensive side of the ice.
Yeah. I mean you can't deny that there's the mental side is a huge part of any sport, right? If you're in your own head, you are taking yourself out of the game pretty consistently. Now you hope that on the professional level, you're equipped to have that happen less. But the reality is, you know, when you're in a position like, say, a goaltender in hockey or soccer as well, you know, there are a lot of factors that are out of your control. I mean, you are the last line of defense, sure. But if your team hangs you out to dry, that happens enough. You can get frustrated. If you get frustrated, that's one thing. If you start letting it get to you, then you start overthinking, and that becomes another issue. It's tough. Like I don't think people appreciate how difficult that element is.
Oh man, there was I can't remember which goalie it was, but there was a goalie who gave a interview a while back, and he was basically saying it's like, yeah, you know, it's a stressful job. It's the job where, you know, one mistake and you're a complete failure. And every single time you make a mistake, there's a big red light that goes on over your head and 18,000 people screaming at you about how bad you are.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, I really wish I could remember which goalie it was, because I don't want it to be someone like Tim Thomas, but it stuck with me. And I remember last season, and I think the season before, we were talking about how brilliantly our goalie and our defense were working together and how it just seemed like we had this fused unit that was just completely in step and knowing how to support each other. You know, we were watching our defenders clear pucks out the front of the net. It was glorious. And we were begging our team to figure it out on the offensive side. And now here we are with the exact opposite problem. And it's just confusing to me that we got arguably better in terms of personnel on defense, but how we're deploying just seems like lost. So it's really, really hard for me to lay the entire, you know, dead bird at the feet of the goalie when, let's face it, I think Dell has had some amazing games, and Jones has not been that great.
Oh, I mean, Dell's had his moments too. I tell you what, guys, let's start to talk about the games. Let's hop into the games. The first game this week, for our week, the Sharks take on the Oilers. Now, they win this game by a score of 7-4. That's a lot of goals. They also outshoot the Oilers pretty dramatically in this game. The first goal is scored by Connor McDavid. So, once again, the Sharks start a game behind. But then, in the first period, Donskoy scores and Hurdle scores. And the second period, it's all Sharks, Couture, and Erik Karlsson. In the third period, you've got Melker Karlsson. Too many Karlssons on this team, I tell you what. Followed by Logan Couture. Then Edmonton scores, Caleb Jones, and then Melker Karlsson scores again. I know, Ben, you're sitting there going, is he going to get a hat trick? He doesn't. But for a minute, you thought, you know, he might. And then Dreisaitl and Connor McDavid. So the Sharks win this game 7-4. But this is another, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, this is a game where there were moments of brilliance with the Sharks where they clicked and they looked lethal, followed very quickly sometimes by moments where they looked the complete opposite.
Well, and they were up 7-1.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
So.
No, like, 7-2.
Or 6-1.
6-1, yeah. But the thing is that, like, and I'm not, like, the deal is, right, with this game, like, they win this game, right? But look at the score and look at where the goals start coming. And if you look at the rest of the games through this week, you see a little bit of pattern there. And that is that you have to play three full periods of hockey every game.
So we always talk about scoring effects and we throw that line around. And it's always hard to sort of accept that a team is going to start sitting on a lead, especially with the way the league plays now. And so my question, I guess, to Ben is, how should a team play? So what is it used to be said in that hockey wisdom is a three-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in hockey.
Yeah, right. That's how dated.
Well, yeah, the Sharks, exactly. It's a 5-0 so, lead.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing. And I think Alex can remember back in the day where it's like if a team got two goals up, right. Oof, the game got tense because that right. third goal.
Yeah, and, it was it. That was yeah, it.
Even if it was second period with 15 minutes left.
Clutch and grab hockey, baby.
So
the goal's coming after that one.
Let me jump in real quick.
My point is we have a bunch of guys running the league, running teams who sort of grew up in that mindset. And are we like what is a safe lead in today's NHL and how should a team deal with it? Like how do you defend a lead in this league?
I don't think you rest on a lead in this NHL. Sorry, Ben, go.
I was just going to say, I think the thing we've seen a lot with DeBoer's teams in the past is when they get a 3 or 4 goal lead, they play a pretty passive, clog up the neutral zone game mm-hmm. and just let the other team come at them in waves, right? They don't continue to put pressure in the offensive zone or try to hold the zone to bleed clock, essentially, right?
Yep.
With an occasional 1 or 2 minute cycle, you know, benefiting the Sharks when Jumbo's on the ice historically, right? And we've expressed our frustration multiple times in the DeBoer era about them sitting on leads, yeah? Yep. And losing those leads sometimes. And, you know, the cup final run year, they tended to actually hold those leads, I think, maybe to an aberrant percentage of the time. Just, you know, through some either sheer luck or just everything clicked with their defense in layers. Colin, I think it was you who mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, that idea that a few years back, the defense and the goalie were really in sync. Mm-hmm. And I really think that when you say that, we're really talking about that first year under DeBoer.
Okay, yeah.
When there was a huge emphasis on shot blocking and defense in layers and yep, blah, yep. blah, blah, right?
Yeah, Couture ate the puck.
But not just Couture, but like they built the whole defense around that. Braun was, and Dylan and yep. eventually Roman, Pollock, they all mm-hmm. were blocking shots. I guess what I'm going to step in here and say is you talked about score effects and what score effects usually is a reflection of a team turtling like the Sharks did. And score effects is usually expressed not by goals necessarily, yeah. but by shot attempts.
Right.
Right. What you'll see is a team that has dominated possession for most of the game lets off the gas and that curve, you know, plummets back towards the other team.
Which didn't really yeah. happen in this game.
And that's exactly kind of the point I wanted to make here, yeah. which is that this actually, I felt like the Sharks played outside of the first period where I thought the Sharks were not very good against Edmonton, particularly early and maybe sort of that goal by McDavid that Alex mentioned.
Yep.
Turn things around a little bit because it certainly mm-hmm. did on the scoreboard. The Sharks more or less, you know, maybe the early part of the third, they played this game a little even. And then they really up until about 5 minutes to go in the game, I felt like they were doing a good job of keeping the offense going.
Yeah.
But
it's when they have a lapse. The lapse is pretty catastrophic.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, this Edmonton game, if you look at the, you know, where the dangerous chances for Edmonton came from, they actually did a relatively good job of even minimizing, again, relative to the rest of this year, you know, dangerous well, chances from inside, you know, the home plate area or really close to the goal. If you look, for example, on the other side, the Sharks were just pummeling yeah, Edmonton's goalies. Right?
All over.
All and- over.
Edmonton's goals all came from Braun's side.
Yeah, and again, what we see is those last couple of goals from Edmonton were largely, you know, defensive lapses or just brain farts on the somewhere in the neutral zone, wherever that allowed the, you know, Edmonton to come in with either, you know, unabated, or with numbers, right? But that's again the story of this year, yeah. right? That. A lot of these goals are going in because the Sharks just they lack something, concentration. You know, they're not being coached very well. I don't know what it is anymore.
So, is there such a thing as a safe lead?
Not with the Sharks. No,
not the Sharks. No, and you know what I think it is, Ben. I mean, and again, we're not on the ice, but to me, it consistently through the season, it's felt like it's got to be communication. It's either communication while on the ice, or potentially it's the players, for some whatever reason, and this is one that gets harder to believe at this point in time, that the players don't understand what their roles are in any given situation. Because and the reason I find that one hard to believe is because last week we talked about Vlasic, right? We talked about how Vlasic was in that Ovi spot. That's happened consistently enough for me to believe that he's being put there. So it seems pretty clear in situations like that the roles are clear. But I will say that there are points on defense. A lot of times, coincidentally, it's the line that Burns is on, especially when Burns and Carlson are together. Sometimes that it feels like those two are not necessarily sure who's supposed to be doing what and where. And they're either looking at each other and stalling, and that creates the issue, or they're trying to go to the same spot and that creates the issue. And it's not just those two guys,
right?
Like in general, I think on the defensive side, it seemed like a lot of times that the defensive players are either in the same spot or not quite sure they're supposed to be. And I don't know whether it's because some forwards are trying to cover defense a little more than they should. I don't know if it's because those defensemen are really forwards and just can't make up their mind, or whether or not it's just that those two players together can't communicate effectively.
So I want to jump in on a couple of your points there, because I think, in the DeBoer era, again, we have grown used to Brent Burns being a human brain fart machine that leads to stupid goals against, no matter who's in net. Like, that is just a thing. It's not new this year, right?
Right.
So that's just a thing you accept, that, once every two games, Burns is going to do something incredibly dumb that ends up in the back of our net.
So
something like that.
Have his numbers reflected that? I feel
yes. The thing with Burns, the thing with Burns is that Burns also gets a crap ton of assists.
Yeah. And goals. You know what
I mean? Yeah, and goals as well.
Like, the reason we put up with Burns, the reason he gets Norris attention is not because he's a great defenseman, but because he does. I hesitate to say he evens out over a season. I don't know which way he leans, whether he's actually a net liability or a net gain. I'm just not smart enough to pull those numbers apart.
Well,
I suspect he is at least a slight net positive because of the way he tips the ice in the other direction most of the time.
Yeah.
I hope he is, because we pay him a lot of money for that.
Sure. As I said, I feel like eye test is betraying me this season when it comes to Burns, because I hate to bring this to your doorstep, Ben, but I feel there's a lot of soft values there. Like, I feel especially being an opposing forward in the corner against Burns is a hellish place to be. So
I would maybe argue that Carlson has been a better defenseman, a better player than Burns throughout this entire year.
I agree.
I would agree.
And I think Carlson is easier to play against, though.
See, that whole hard or easy thing play against thing, I think, is a bunch of horse shit. And I think you guys know I think it's a bunch of horse shit.
I didn't say it.
I know, and I know that's why I say I'm sorry to bring this to you, but
because it feels pretty damn good to score a goal. So go ahead and hip check me once a game, you dipshit, and I'll just skate around you later and score. Right?
So, if the league called roughing and cross-checking by the letter of the rule, we would see a lot friendlier league.
This league doesn't even know what interference is.
Exactly. So, there's players like Burns where, if he doesn't have a legal play on you in the corner, he's just going to start bullying you because he's a giant Wookiee and he can do that. Whereas Carlson has to be smart. He doesn't have the size to just manhandle any player in the NHL. He has to use his stick.
He's a small guy, though.
No. But by NHL standards, especially with how the league's progressing, Carlson's not pushing Laney around.
And I'd agree with Colin that that's not the game he plays, right? He doesn't, in front of the net, he's not bodying you. He's tying up your stick, right?
Yeah,
anticipating where the puck is going to go, and he's going to, get in a diversion with his stick or his foot and try to go gain possession of the puck.
Yeah.
You mean play defense?
Yeah.
Right.
No, seriously. Like, Vlasic and Carlson are both incredibly smart sticks on the defensive zone, as Donskoy, Couture, and a few others, Suomela. So I think Burns does bring those soft values that don't show up on the numbers. I'm sorry. But to the point you like to bring up all the time, it's a diminishing return play style. Like Burns will is hitting himself out of the league by playing this way.
Yeah, I don't think he hits near as much as some of those guys that we worry about. I think I would want to finish my point here. Burns and his once per game fuck up and his value is that the problem is that we see, you know, two or three other players, and it's not always the same player per game making the same mistakes. And yes. Alex, you said something about whether it's the forwards overcommitting or defensemen overcommitting. I've seen other folks in the sort of Sharks fanosphere note that it feels like the defensemen are pinching even more along the board than they have before.
100%.
That's a recipe for a puck to squirt out and lead to a one-on-one on
your goalie. Absolutely.
If you pinch with no support, which is what we're doing.
Well, but here's the thing. If you're pinching in general, you're implying that you're pulling yourself very far forward, right?
Yeah.
So, like, even if you have support, you're still allowing a situation for, you know, 2-1 scenario. And look, like, remember, I don't know if you guys remember last year, we talked about the swarm. I'm not seeing teams play the swarm as efficiently. Maybe it's because everyone caught on to it. Yeah. But that's a scenario where if you pinch on that and you blow it, you got like a
And going back to that communication question, right? When you pinch, you're supposed to be doing that when you've, you know, sort of made eye contact with a forward who's going to move to your spot.
Preferably. Yep. Yeah.
Right. And that's where I don't think the forwards are filling that need, and the defensemen are sort of pinching anyway.
It could be the system this time around, because if you look at the forwards, it feels like forwards are playing very good as well. So
agreed.
Listen, guys, this is going to pop up again because we have another game.
And what a game.
And that is Sharks Calgary. Hey, did you guys like the amount of goals scored in the last game? Well, literally, they beat it on both sides. The Sharks do not win this one. They lose by a score of 8-5 to the Calgary Flames. Sharks. So I'm just going to go to the Sharks scoring because there's a lot of goals. First period, Radil scores. Second period, Burns and Donskoy score. And third period, Donskoy scores. And Jumbo scores at the end. Now, this is another one of those games where you looked at it and you said, is Donskoy going to get a hat trick? I have news for you guys. Sharks did not get hat tricks this week. So before you get too excited, it didn't happen. This is one of those games, again, where this flips the other way. But there were moments of this game where the Sharks were on. It looked damn near unbeatable. And then there were moments where they had a brain fart, and it was completely opposite. Now, obviously, they had more brain farts than anything. But even when you look at possession and other stuff, like the Sharks here, it's not like they play a crap game.
Nope.
But it's those moments. When the Sharks make, to me, it feels like, and this is an eyeball thing, this is not a statistic thing, it feels like the Sharks aren't giving up tough goals in a lot of these situations. The Sharks are blowing something and giving a real obvious goal. That's how this game felt to me. That's how last game felt to me. That's how some of the Calgary goals felt to me. And that's how it's kind of felt all season, where it's sort of like there isn't really much of a middle. It's like they're on either all the way, or like you see it and you go, well, that guy's gonna score, and he scores.
Yep.
Yeah, and Dell did not have a particularly good game here. Ooh. I would say.
Oh.
I was waiting for someone to tweet at you, Ben, basically assaulting me and going, you want Dell? And for me to be like, I didn't say Dell was like a Hall of Famer.
Well, to be fair, like there were a couple just what are you gonna do goals on Dell. Like the double tip, I think, is my favorite one, where it gets tipped twice.
About the Burns one, right, where Burns
I thought that was Backlund's second goal.
Maybe it was
Tkachuk's. You might be right.
Yeah, because there was one where, like, I think it was Burns or someone in back, like, tries to bat it defensively and bats it straight down.
No, you're right. It's Backlund's second goal.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was something that Dell was just basically, you had to look at him and shrug and go, sorry, I'll buy you a beer afterwards.
Right. But there was one or two that you want your goalie to have too. I mean, the Sharks were never really in this game. I think that's, you know, from a scoring perspective anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like, as I was saying to you guys in our chat before we podcasted, some teams, I feel, have our number. They just sort of like, oh, we're playing the Sharks. Okay, well, we just need to check these three boxes, you know, watch them implode, and then pick up the pieces and take a win. And, you know, step one, start taking, you know, risks with penalties. Start trying to play body over puck and get in our heads, because it seems like we're a team that's easily tipped over. Step two is just spread us out and open up gaps on the transition. And then once you got like a goal or two on us and we start scrambling and try to catch up, you just have to, you know, keep to steps one and two and, you know, walk all the way home.
Yeah.
And especially when the refs don't pull a game in, when the refs, you know, pocket the whistle and let them play, we get screwed because we can't let it go.
The team that's behind always gets screwed in that situation, you know?
Yeah, true.
And the Sharks played a terrible first period. Let's just put that out, there.
Butts, bad.
And if you want to talk about what score effects looks like, you know, when you're down 3-1 in the first, the second period looks a lot like what score effects is supposed to look like, right? The team that's behind comes out and puts a shit ton of shot attempts on goal. You know, and really, you know, bully for the Sharks, except the closest they got here was 4-3 before, you know, Calgary was able to tip the ice, and they really did in the third period. The Sharks came out and played even for a bit and then just fell off, you know, fell through the ice and boom, now the game's out of reach.
Yeah. I just like Calgary outplayed us. Like, this isn't one of those things where I'm whining that the refs gave the other team a game. And especially given that Bennett hit, I can't enjoy a game where I watch the wheels come off this badly and then just watch the entire system around the game just sort of nod and be like, yeah, this is good. That's fine. Nobody's dead yet.
But to you know, to Alex's whole point, I mean, this was the inconsistency of the Sharks in sort of a nutshell.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, terrible first period, a pretty strong second period, and a lapse in the third, and off we go to a loss, right? Ultimately, if you look at sort of what's going on under the surface of this game, the Sharks played a game that, you know, was semi-respectable, except for the mistakes. But this team just keeps making
mistakes. And when the team, and this is a good transition into the next game, actually, because the next game the Sharks should play the Avalanche, and Sharks eke out a win here 5-4. And I know it sounds weird to say that, but The Sharks, okay, I want to talk about scoring, and then I want to talk about how that connects to the last statement. The Sharks open scoring. Joe Pavelski scores a goal pretty early. Hey, early goals. We see a lot of those this season on other side. Then the Avs score. Then Brent Burns score. So it's 2-1 at the end of the first. Second period, the Sharks kind of explode, right? You get goals from Evander Kane, Donskoy, Radil. And that Radil goal, by the way, we can talk about
it.
That one.
Pretty.
Pretty. Also, the Burns goal in the first is also pretty.
I do want to talk about what my favorite thing about the Radil goal was, which is he stands there by himself with his hand up for a full 5 seconds before anybody goes, oh, maybe we should go hug the dude.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there like,
I know a lot of people read that goal as Pavelski taking a shot and missing, but if you actually watch the Sharks this season, Pavelski's done this play a lot where he comes up and he tries to pass it off the board if there's no one back there behind the goalie to go around. And then the center, in this case, Couture, you know, crashes and they hope for the angle. It was a fun play. But hold on, I'm going to get there. So right now it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5-1. The Avs would score at the end to make it 5-2. And you're feeling real confident as a Sharks fan. But then the third period, you start to see around the halfway mark, you start to see the Avs really start to battle back. They score two more goals and it ends up being 5-4. Now, the reason I wanted to move over to this game is because, Ben, to your point on my point, I don't know how you want to put it. But basically, look at things like the Burns goal, the Radil goal, and even the Kane goal, and even the Pavelski goal. Those are goals that the Sharks put together, and you're like, damn, that was nice. But then some of the goals that came the other side were the like complete opposite of that, right? They weren't hard-fought goals as much as they were like crazy defensive lapses. And there were a couple times in the third period, I think that's where the Burns fumble was, if I remember correctly, where you watch a play and you go, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And fortunately, you know, Jones ends up making the save. But this is one of those situations where not only was it inconsistent across the three periods, but when the Sharks looked hot in this game, they looked hot, like burn your fingers on the stove hot. But when they looked cold, they looked cold, and it was like a minute to minute thing almost. Yeah.
Well, they fell asleep after the Pavelski goal too, which was really mystifying. And then just again, kind of almost like exactly as you say, almost like the Calgary game, they woke up in the second. And then the third was anybody's game, really.
Yeah, and that's why I want to know what a safe win is, because Alex is sitting there going, "That was an amazing goal." I'm sitting there going, "Oh God, is it? Are we just going to lose going five up?"
Colin, there isn't. There isn't a magic moment this season, and I think that's our
point. Not for the Sharks. I mean, that's. I want to say that I'm not sure this is true the rest of the league.
A lot of teams, if they score five, scoring feels like it's up, but
it is up.
But there are a lot of games that have five goals. But here's the thing: I think our big point, and it's the point to DeBoer if he's listening, which he isn't, is, hey man, there is no magic number for us right now, so don't let your foot off the gas. And that does not mean overcommit everybody and pinch everybody, but it does mean. Don't rest on your laurels at any point in time, because yes, we can score that many goals, but this year in particular, seemingly, so can pretty much any other team except for the Coyotes and the Kings.
Yeah, but if you like either of those teams, you're a bad person.
You should feel bad. I don't disagree.
Talking to you, Tom Cruise.
Guys, any other thoughts on this game before we go to the three stars?
I mean, the thing for me, and I went and double checked this right now just to make sure I was right. When you go up against a team, even a team that's lethal, to me, you should then start seeing the line minutes from across your team just get more and more evened out, because you've got the lead. If you've got depth that you trust, which we do, you just start rolling your lines, because your job now is to just tire out the other team faster. You want to tire out their stars. Like against Edmonton, okay, maybe you don't put Goodrow, Carlson, and like Radil or LeBanc out against McDavid, because that's a laugh riot. But maybe you do, because you can absorb one goal and then have your top squad out against the nothing that is the rest of the Edmonton team. But you look at our games where we've won, and it looks like every other game in terms of line minutes that we have, where the same cast of people are 20 plus minutes, the same cast of people are 15 or less. DeBoer basically just took the shift script from 2 years ago. It was like, yeah, that looks good. And I don't see us playing to actually exploit a lead. I see us just sort of, turtling up.
Well, on that note, guys, three stars of the week, Colin, since you were just talking. Ben, go first.
I haven't given a lot of thought to this, except that Jonas Donskoy is going to be my first star, because damn, was he super hot this week. And that Dangle goal against the Habs was pretty. It was French chef kiss. Mwah! Beyond that, I felt like probably give my third star, I think, to Evander Kane, because he had a pretty good week.
Yeah.
And we need him to maybe play a little bit more consistently, but he's been pretty good. And I think I'll give my second star to Radil.
Oh, God. He's one of my stars for sure.
And, I still think there are guys who should be getting a shot maybe over some guys who are playing, but Radil's been very good. And, he should be. He's like 39. Just kidding. You think he's young, but he's not. He's 28. But he's been really, really good. And the Sharks have certainly also given him some opportunities to play with very good players, which will always help.
Hey, so he's capitalizing on it.
He is, and I will say that I want to see this last beyond a week or two, right? Because sample size is a little small at the moment. Yep. But if we're still talking about Radil, being, a half a point per game guy towards the end of the year, then, kudos to the Sharks for bringing this guy over and giving him an opportunity.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Colin, that's my three stars. I'm going to have you go last. My third star is Rodil. Way to steal my thunder, Ben.
Sucker.
I know. I'm going to do a cop-out for my second star, which is basically the team. There are a lot of guys on this team. The offense. There are a lot of guys on the offense that had some pretty brilliant moments, if not games. And then my first star, I'm gonna dance with this a little bit. I'm gonna split my first star specifically between Donskoy and Burns. I thought Burns, especially when combined with Carlson this week, had a lot of really nice plays. And I thought it was really encouraging to see one of our all-stars actually put in some all-star performances here and there. So those are my three stars. Colin, your three stars.
Well, since this seems to be the stars of vagary, I'm gonna give my third star to our bottom six, because
I thought you were going to say Barry Trotz for what he's doing for the Islanders.
No, I hate the Eastern Conference. Like any sort of success there makes me sad. Other than good players from our conference going over there and ending their careers. Hi, Rangers. Anyways, so our bottom six, and I feel I can be vague here because our bottom six changes week to week. We have a deep team, and you know, we're having guys who should be playing on top two lines for other teams playing on our bottom two and just and rocking out. And I feel Sharks fan base, and especially like the press and stuff I see, forget just how recently this team had no depth. And to be this spoiled, to look at a potential, you know, injury-ridden playoffs and be like, okay, we're pretty much four deep in every position, so we're good. You know, it's nice. And they keep performing. They keep doing their jobs. And there's a couple times this week where I think we saw our bottom six shifted against top lines, and, you know, they didn't get absolutely blown up. So good job, guys.
I mean, worth noting, there's a big, you know, transition over the last couple of weeks where our centers – are now, you know, Couture for the top line, Jumbo for the second, and Hurdle being given that opportunity again to be a center for four games until DeBoer gets tired of it. And you know, Hurdle has had some pretty damn good games in that third line center role. So
thank you for the segue. My second star actually goes to Hurdle because he is carrying a line. And I challenge people to disagree because he is carrying that line. Like, it is on his back, and you see him carrying the play. You see him being that sort of power center. So I don't like him skating on the third line. I'd rather see him head up the second and Thornton stay down. But, I mean, he's rocking the position.
Well, I mean, and the line numbering is really
arbitrary.
It's arbitrary at that point.
I mean, sure. I would need to look in to see if there's a direct line between how DeBoer shifts the person and what line they're on.
Right, in minutes is what you'd want to look into.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as like Thornton is getting enough time to regrow his knees, you know, I'm fine. and then first star, it's also going to be a shared star between Pavelski and Couture, because, I mean, those guys are the heart and the blood of our offense. And, you know, it's... I think Couture, we give him a lot of shit for how he presents himself in interviews.
But love him. It's in jest. Yeah.
And I mean,
mostly.
I'm going to have to stop giving him stars pretty soon this season because I feel like I'm just dusting him. But yeah, like Pavelski is Captain America. I would say he's possibly, even considering the mega talent that is captains on other teams, I think Pavelski is the best captain in the league. I've never questioned how he's behaved during a questionable play. I've never felt like he's not there stepping up at the right time or like getting in somebody's face or backing off and pulling his teammates away. You know, he's scoring the goals. He's putting up defense. He's playing physical for a guy who's like 4'2". You know, he's a damn good captain. You know, he is Owen Nolan quality captain.
I'm just going to say, I'll have what you're having. Guys, Sharks have some games this week. Tomorrow, they play Tampa Bay. I had tickets to this game, and I had to sell them, damn it. Couldn't get a babysitter, but that's how it works. So tomorrow they play Tampa Bay at home. And then, hey, guys, you like back-to-backs? Three this month. I don't know why, but one of them is this week. Monday they take on the Kings at home, and Tuesday they play Edmonton at home. So at least those ones are back-to-back, because later they take on Pittsburgh and Arizona, and they're not in the same location. But anyway, Tampa Bay, Kings, Edmonton, Vegas, and then the following Saturday, even though we usually pod on Friday, just in case, they play the Ottawa Senators. Now, right now, as of this podcast, the Sharks are sitting in third in the Pacific Division. They have 51 points. They are just behind Vegas and Calgary, who are tied at 54 points apiece. Calgary up top with the tiebreaker. And then a decent ways behind them is Anaheim with 45 points. The Sharks are starting to split away from the pack, which is encouraging. But there's still a lot of season left to play. We're coming up to the All-Star game. That is exciting. Try to get your tickets. Vote Couture in. You can check us out on Twitter at Circling the Cup. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. You can find us on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Android people, I don't even know why you even bother listening to this part of the podcast. I'm just going to tell you to figure it out. You can do it. And guys, that concludes another week of Sharks Hockey and our podcast. I think you know what to do. Say bye-bye.
Eric Carlson long forever.
Long pregnant pause is the way to end that podcast. That's great.
Write in questions. They're fun.
Yes, please write in questions. We will respond to them. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, maybe we should start posting the like pages and pages of chat ranting we have when we get a question.
Yeah. I really need to talk about how good Brendan Dillon has been this year at some point.
Bye-bye. Well,
anyway, like bye.